morning. Shout out to mothers today, those who are here and also those who are in our hearts, recognising that today is not an easy day for a percentage of us and of the people we know, for very important reasons. Today may be a tough day. The next section of our Sermon on the Mount is arguably the centrepiece of Jesus' oration and of these three chapters in Matthew. It's chapter 5 and verse 13, and I want to read it to you in two versions. First of all, the NIV. And remember, Jesus has his disciples and other people who had decided to follow him early in his ministry listening to what he was saying. You are the salt of the earth, but if salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. And then the message. Let me tell you why you're here. You're here to be salt seasoning that brings out the God flavours of this earth. If you lose your saltiness, how will people taste godliness? You've lost your usefulness and will end up in the garbage. I read those two versions partly because they bring complementary perspectives as to why we might consider this to be a centrepiece of Jesus' teaching of his followers, his disciples. The first is an affirmation, where Jesus says to these people who are basically starting out on a journey of following him, you are the salt of the earth. Not you will become, or you may be, or if you do the right thing, you will be the salt of the earth. He's actually saying already you are. So wherever we are on our journey, starting out, and remember these disciples mucked up fairly regularly after this, but Jesus was still affirming, you are the salt of the earth. But then Peterson brings out what I think is also in this passage when he says, let me tell you why you are here. In other words, he's saying, I want to go to the heart of the matter about what life is about. The essence of following me, the essence of Christian discipleship. I want to tell you what would be the best reason on earth for your life and what will make your life tick most effectively. It's interesting that the major part of this verse actually is the second part in terms of the volume, and what Jesus is wanting to communicate is that whatever we are now, or even whatever we could become, we could lose that. And if we lose it, Jesus is saying that is crucial. There's actually two ways that the key word in that second part of the verse can be rendered, and they're actually equally valid. One is the one that's translated here, and that is that you could become rubbish. In other words, of no real earthly use. But there's another equally important and I think very powerful expression of this, in that the word can be translated foolish. You could waste your life. And in this respect, this backs up or tends to give heads up to what becomes the concluding part of the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 7. And I don't want to choose anybody else's thunder, but I will just read and remind you of that. And this is from the Message translation. These words I speak to you are not incidental additions to your life, homeowner improvements to your standard of living. They are foundational words, words to build a life on. If you work these words into your life, you're like a smart carpenter who built his house on solid rock. Rain poured down, the river flooded, a tornado hit, but nothing moved that house. It was fixed to the rock. But if you just use my words in Bible studies and don't work them into your life, you're like a stupid carpenter who built his house on the sandy beach. When a storm rolled in and the waves came up, it collapsed like a house of cards. Words to build a life on. Not just homeowner add-on improvements to your life. These are more than just a nice speech by Jesus that was inspiring because they clapped him at the end. Jesus is saying there's a real deep practicality in the principles and the values that I'm sharing with you as my followers today. And it's even deeper than that, that depending on how much we follow and in this sense, we're thinking particularly of the teachings and the values from Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, our life can actually, irrespective of whether it's easy or really tough, it can actually work and count effectively. Because you know that the effectiveness and the quality of life is an inside thing, much more than it is an outside thing. That doesn't mean that circumstances are not incredibly important and impacting, but it's what we bring to them, the inside, the internal, that Jesus was addressing here. Wisdom. Words to build a life on. I want to share very briefly three interrelated, interconnected, complementary reasons why Jesus called his disciples the salt of the earth. In that society, salt was very, very highly valued. It was almost synonymous with the idea of somebody being rich. But it also had the concept of purity, pure, but the concept of incredible power. And you know that it only takes a grain or a few grains of salt to a whole waterway to make it salty. In other words, there's this incredible capacity of salt to pervade and to be very, very powerful. So the people in the day of Jesus actually knew a lot about salt. They valued it extremely highly. And Jesus said, you are the salt of the earth. I love the fact that that's actually come today to have very, very relevant, strong, positive expression. To say to somebody, you are the salt of the earth. I know in my mentoring of Christian leaders, every now and then spontaneously, I've just found it coming out of me saying to a Christian pastor or a leader, you know what, you're the salt of the earth. What do we mean by that? Somebody who is reliable. Somebody who is trustworthy. Somebody who is caring. Somebody who expresses love and grace. You are the salt of the earth. Can I suggest to you that the key flavours of the salt of the Christian disciple, the Christian follower, are experiencing deeply the love of God, unconditional positive regard, unconditional love, and expressing the grace of God. Through the cross, we are able to be refreshed, start again. We're given more than we ever deserve. We are able then to love others in that way, and we are able to express grace to other people. I think this whole idea of quality of life and relationships fits in very well with the whole idea of Mother's Day and the way mothers bring love and grace directly to our lives and to our families and to our homes. I preached here, I don't know how many years ago, but it's a few years ago on Mother's Day. I can't quite work out why I get the gig on Mother's Day, but it was a few years ago, so I'm going to tell you a little story that I mentioned then on the assumption that there's quite a lot of new people here and probably you don't remember it anyway. It's a sermon that I read many, many years ago by a guy by the name of Dr. Peter Marshall, who was actually a Scottish preacher, but he became the chaplain to the Senate of the United States of America. And on a Mother's Day, he preached a sermon. I don't know where he preached it, but it was entitled The Keeper of the Springs. And it was, I don't know whether it's fictitious or whether it's actually about a real little village somewhere in Europe that was at the bottom of some hills or mountains. And the village was known all across the area for its clean, fresh water and its fresh, bubbling springs. But the community fell into some financial dilemma and they were looking to cut their budget. And there was a person whose job it was to go around to all of the waterways and the springs every day and just clean out whatever muck had arrived. And in the council meeting, somebody said, "What does this person do? Can we cut their job?" And they decided, nobody knew basically what he did, so they made him redundant. What they recognised was that within a fairly short period of time, the waterways were no longer clean. The springs were no longer clean. People weren't coming to the village anymore to get their fresh water. The whole village and the whole environment was contaminated, and so they reinstated the keeper of the springs. I believe that's love and grace, are the keeper of the springs within our lives, within our communities, within our churches, to be able to deeply be secure in the love of God, to know that we are okay and we are worthwhile because God loves us, and then to be able to express grace to other people, which is refreshing and keeps their lives fresh as well. The second interrelated emphasis you would be very aware of, and that is that salt is a preservative. There's a natural attrition in life. There's a natural staleness. We go off. I won't go into any more detail about what happens if we're not refreshed every day. But you know that that seems, it's called entropy, I think, in science, where there's a running down. And salt was able to keep the vitality alive. Salt was able to preserve the freshness. Salt was able to make sure that the flavours that God brings into this life, particularly love and grace, stay fresh every day, because if they go stale, it's not a good look. It's not a good feel. These qualities that Jesus, that God brings to our lives through his love and his grace, they are winsome qualities to other people. I love the fact that in Acts 2:47, talking about the early church, there's a rendering of how the church was viewed in the community. And Peterson says they met together, worshipping and praising God, etc. And people liked what they saw. Wow. People liked what they saw. There was this flavour that actually was attractive and winsome. Unfortunately, that tends to dissipate unless there's something working vitally and refreshingly within our lives. I just happened in Barclay's commentary to come across a quotation from, you probably recognise that in the 4th century BC, Constantine made Christianity the official religion of the Roman Empire. Not a good idea. I'm not sure Jesus, I think Jesus would have said, how did we get here from where I started, about it becoming the, but after Constantine, three decades later, there was a guy came in as emperor by the name of Julian. And this is a quote from him about the Christians. He says, have you looked closely lately at these Christians? Hollow-eyed, pale-cheeked, flat-chested all. I'm not sure about that last little bit, but hollow-eyed, pale-cheeked. Somehow or another, if those flavours are not preserved and renewed every day, they not only go stale, but it's not a good look. I have mentioned previously that there's research relatively recently done about Australia on what they call faith blockers. What would stop people from even entertaining being a follower of Jesus or becoming a Christian? And in Australia, this research by McCrindle recognised that basically people out there who are not followers of Jesus see us as judgmental, hypocritical, and abusers when it comes to leadership. Now, how sad is that? That is absolutely tragic, because that's the opposite of what Jesus is talking about here. The third area is one that has become particularly important, and I love to think about it regularly and to express it regularly. That Jesus encourages me, he encourages you to be the flavours and the colours of God in the world. Now, I don't want to steal whoever's preaching next week, but I must link the next verse here, because you know that Jesus also said to these disciples, you are the light of the world. And light brings out colour. So I think it's both very encouraging and very challenging to me and to you today that Jesus says to us, we are the people who not only represent the love and grace of God, but we are the love of grace, the love and grace of God today. And how deeply our community needs those touches of love and grace. How deeply we need the blessing of receiving grace every day, better than we deserve. It's life-changing, even when little things happen. Do you realise how powerful small acts of kindness and grace are? Again, here we can link very much this theme with Mother's Day. Mothers, they're more than this, but they are the keepers of the springs. They keep the whole thing going. Mothers actually express love and grace in ways that are usually unseen and are beyond the call of duty. Beyond the call of duty. I saw a YouTube clip and I was going to bring it, but it was a little bit long and a bit smolchy, so I decided not to use it. But I'll tell you in 1 minute what it was. It was of a young lad who, when he was required to do some chores at home, you may have seen this, he brought an invoice to his mother with the chores listed, and he had a price beside each of the chores at a particular rate for his labour, and he gave it to his mother. She read it and then she turned it over and started writing on the other side of the paper. And she started with, you know, the nights I spent overtime with you when nobody else knew anything about it, etc., etc. And the young boy, obviously affected by that, turned the page back over and wrote "paid in full" against each of those. Wherever love and grace is expressed, and usually it's behind the scenes and in what people consider to be little ways, it is very powerful. In the last 3 or 4 weeks, I've had 3 experiences. One, I was needing help with my phone, so I went to the phone booth at Gosford Imperial Centre, and the young man there said, "Look, leave it with me and I'll check it out, whatever." When I went back in 20 minutes, he had it working perfectly, and I got my card out and he said, no, forget about it. I said to him, "Mate, you've got me. I'm coming back here anytime. I need any help with my phone, and it's fairly regularly, I can tell you. You've got me." I bought a muffin at a bakery on the coast, and I ended up with 2 muffins in the bag, and the young man said to me, "I thought that one was a bit small, so I've given you 2. I said to him, "You've got me. I'm coming back." Marg and I were sitting on the foreshore yesterday, me with my Coke and she with her coffee, just enjoying the sunshine, and a lady walked past and she had just a little thing in her left hand. It was wrapped up in a white serviette, and she went about 5 steps past us and then she turned around and she came back to us and she gave me this little white package, and she said, "I have taken a lot of bananas that are excess to my need to the local cafe. I gave them the bananas and they gave me this. Would you like it?" So we, with our Coke and our coffee, we had a raspberry muffin. Do you recognise how actually life-changing little events, certainly day-changing, it can change the flavour of a day when we are able to be the colours and the flavours of God? And again, let me say, so much love and grace is expressed behind the scenes and when no one would probably ever know about it. And I have reflected in the past, but where Marg and I are incredibly grateful to have 3 beautiful children. But the second and the third birth were twins and they were premature. and they were both projectile vomiters and feeding every 3 hours. So that Marg and I actually got to the point where we took it in turns, a night about, because it was so difficult. And I was ministering at Epping Church of Christ at the time. We get them dressed up on a Sunday and take them to church, and everybody would goo and gah, how beautiful they were, and we'd go home to another week of hell. And I have no idea what I preached during those first 6 months. But we never ever thought, you know, are we going to do this or not? I thought I'd gotten beyond it, actually, but there was a little event happened a long time later. One of those twins, our daughter, had twins. And about 4 or 5 weeks after the twins were born, because they live interstate, we'd been there straight after the birth, but we visited again. And Lyndall met us at the door, and she said to me, "Ah, you'll never believe it. They're feeding, they're sleeping right through." And I said to her, it was spontaneous, I said, "Honey, that's really good, but you don't deserve that." So somewhere or other, there was still something in there. But do you recognise, I think parenting, fathering and mothering, is a great example of how love and grace builds a life. It's the kind of foundation that will make a life work effectively. I've talked about love and grace, and that's primarily the two key themes. But I could express that in a little more detail as I come towards the conclusion by expressing the fruit of the Spirit. And remember, love is the first of the fruit of the Spirit. And a lot of the qualities of the fruit of the Spirit, like kindness and patience, depend on grace. And grace comes out of love. So if we love somebody, we will be willing to be patient with them for their sake, not for our own sake. And these fruit of the Spirit actually spell out a little more the sub-themes of this life that allows us to be the salt of the world and also recognises that we are already the salt of the earth. But what happens when we live God's way? He brings gifts into our lives, much the same way that fruit appears in an orchard. Things like affection for others, exuberance about life, serenity. We develop a willingness to stick with things, a sense of compassion in the heart, and a conviction that a basic holiness permeates things and people. These are profound. A basic holiness permeates things. When did you think about that lately? A God-shaped vacuum at the very worst. The DNA of God, the image of God in reality on every person in this world. We find ourselves involved in loyal commitments, not needing to force our way in life, able to marshal and direct our energies wisely. It's love and grace that keeps us fresh. If we lose our first love, it's not a good look. We don't enjoy it. Life doesn't work all that well for us and for those around us. If we lose our first love, it's actually not the colours and the flavours of God that will be winsome to others to help them to come to know and love God. And there's a passage in Revelation 3 verse 20 that's normally applied to new people or people becoming new Christians, but it was actually written to the church at Laodicea, and that's the church that the writer of Revelation expressed as having lost its first love. become stale. And then he says, behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with that person and they with me. Can I just suggest to you that this is something that God is wanting us to do many times a day. Open the door to his love and his grace. Bathe in it. Be immersed in it. Be baptized in the love and grace of God, so that then we can be those colours and those flavours to other people. So that we can actually, by the life, and we'll always need forgiveness, we'll always need personal refreshness. This is not saying, although hopefully we gradually grow to be more like Jesus, this means that we need to live humbly before God. But then we can truly be the flavours and the colours of God, the love and the grace of God. You, I, are the salt of the earth. Can we pray together? What an incredible affirmation, Lord. The creator of